On today's episode of Good Word, James Edwards of The Athletic joins me to discuss the wild, wild west, what happens with LeBron and Nikola Jokic's injuries, the New York Knicks and their team construction, and Jimmy Butler and the resurgent Detroit Pistons. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. I almost got lost doing that for a second. That's what happens when you take a week off of work. Before we begin today, a bit of business to get into if you haven't already. Please check out The Good Word with Goodwill on YouTube and rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you get your audio podcast. Back in the saddle with my man, James Edwards of Michigan State and The Athletic. What's going on, James?
Go green. Go white. Listen, it's that time of the year. People know what time it is. It's clockwork. Izzo, 16 Sweet 16s in 30 years. And I feel like we're going to get to the Final Four. I don't want to count my chickens too early. But what I really want so bad, you have your Fab Five hoodie on. We need the Michigan-Michigan State game in the NCAA tournament. Like, I'm rooting for Michigan to beat Auburn. I never root for Michigan. I need Michigan-Michigan State in the NCAA tournament. That would be insane.
It don't really matter to me that much. You know what I mean? Like Michigan coming back in the fashion that they did on Sunday and then, like, waxing in the second half. I'm like, oh, okay, got a little more talent than I originally thought. Michigan State, y'all are reasonably good this year. I do like Jace Richardson. That kid is a dog.
He's
like
nice.
Him a lot.
He can't go right, but I don't have Killian Hayes concerns with him.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a whole different level of concerns. But we're going to talk some Knicks. We're going to talk some Pistons and Cade Cunningham. But first, I feel like we have to start with the biggest injury concerns in the Western Conference, James. Mm-hmm. You're in Jersey City. You cover the Knicks, but you know this league. LeBron just came back from his groin injury, and the Lakers got subsequently waxed at home by the Chicago Bulls and their young guys. Nikola Jokic, his assortment of injuries, it's a concern, but I'm not sure if it's one of those things where I'm worried about him, like if I would be worried about Giannis in a knee or something like that.
Right.
But I think Denver's issue is, if Jokic is not 100%, you don't have a player there. Even Jamal Murray, even when Jokic is 100%, can Jamal Murray bring his game up all the time? And if Jokic is 5% off, I don't know if they have that margin for error, James, where they can make it up in a Western Conference where it may not be enough if he's at 100%.
No, I agree. And I know that Nuggets team has been good this season. Seeing them twice in person, it is a team that they don't look as good as the record suggests when I've seen them live. The two games I saw, Jokic is just playing no defense. They obviously are lacking in shot creation. And I agree with you. Like, if Jokic is out or hampered or not 90 to 100%, this team is in trouble because, like I said, I don't think they're that good with him at 100%, as great as he is. And two, it's like, where is the offense going to come from? Is he going to be able to defend at a baseline level? This team is, Jamal Murray's had an up and down year. He was really good last night in Houston, but obviously up and down. And it's a team that just doesn't have the margin for error that a lot of good teams in the NBA have. And I think that's why I'm not too concerned about the Lakers thing. LeBron obviously is a big piece of what they do, and he's had a great year. But thanks to Nico Harrison, they have Luka Doncic. That man, as we've seen, has done more. I wouldn't say with less, right? Like, I don't want to disrespect Kyrie in that regard, but he's done more. He's done a lot with not a lot. And this Lakers team has just been playing pretty good basketball for the most part this second half of the season. So it's definitely a bigger concern for the Nuggets. Everything revolves around Jokic. While in LA, you have guys who can alternate that, even throw obviously Austin Reeves into that. They just have a little bit more. And I think shot creation and not just for yourself, but playmaking for others, is probably the least talked about important thing in today's game when it comes to roster building. And to have multiple guys who can create for themselves and others is something that the Lakers have that at that level that not many teams have.
That's why, and we're going to get to this later, but that's why I have big-time concerns if I am Detroit against the Knicks in a playoff series. Because I'm starting to hear everybody starting to say the things that I've been saying for the past 3 months. If the Pistons and Knicks meet in the playoffs, the Knicks will be going home.
Yeah.
I'm starting to change my tune a little bit, and we'll get to that when we talk about Cade, but it's for that very reason that I have concerns. It's about shot creation. Can you get your shot? Mm-hmm. Luka Doncic is one of the best, greatest, can you get your shot players in the history of this game. Despite the weight concerns, the conditioning, he can get his shot in such a way that, you know, he opens locked doors type of thing. Like, that's right. The guy that he is. Jokic is the supreme machine in the NBA. Everything revolves around him. The Christian Browns, the Peyton Watsons, the Russell Westbrooks at this stage of his career, they all need Nikola Jokic and his playmaking to eat. You brought up the lack of defense. I'm 100% with you. There's always this, how do you play Jokic on pick and roll defense? If I'm offenses, I'm using him every single time. I'm bringing you up to the screen. I'm going to see how much interest you have in defending that night.
Yep.
For the Lakers, to me, LeBron has had a great year, but he's not their best player. Luka Doncic is their best player. You could say LeBron has had the better year, and at 40 years old, man, he is doing some crazy stuff. There's no disrespect for LeBron here. But especially when you have a groin, James, a groin injury, like everybody's got groins. When you got a groin injury, when you've got that, you almost have to slow walk it. In a way, because if that thing pops, it's done. It's almost like you have to treat it like a hamstring, right? Oh, it's a hamstring strain. Well, we got to be careful with it, because if it's re-aggravated, it's not going to be re-aggravated in a light way. It's going to be re-aggravated in a major way. So I was in Boston the night that LeBron aggravated the groin injury. And I remember hearing that night, it's not going to be as serious as everybody thinks. Wouldn't be surprised if he was back in a week or two. Came right back in a week or two. But subsequently, you have these games to play, James. My fear is, 40-year-olds, do you get healthier when you start having nicks and bruises like that throughout the course of the season? Like, that's the fear. Remember, he missed the All-Star game because, of an injury and everything else. And then he showed up taking pictures without his jersey. I thought that was hilarious, right? But you're of the belief, it seems, that the Lakers are better equipped to survive than the Nuggets. Can the Lakers win more than a playoff round if with LeBron at 75%?
Ooh, that's a great question, right? So my thing with the LeBron, like you mentioned, Vinny, like you're dead on, like hamstring, groins, even ankle injuries, like that stuff can linger. And it is not you're out for 2 weeks and then you're magically healed. Like, that stuff goes well into the offseason usually. Now, what I will say is LeBron is different than any athlete we've ever seen in terms of health and ability to recover. Mm-hmm. And I would also say I wouldn't be surprised if kind of what you mentioned, like the injury isn't as serious as it appears. Like, it feels like LeBron tends to take some time off right before the playoffs usually. And maybe this was one of those situations. But yeah, let's say he is tech like at a 75%. The West is weird, man. I don't think the Lakers are title contenders personally, even like at full strength. Because I do think that OKC is by far and away the best team in the West. I think Houston gives LA some problems.
Mm.
I know that might be the unpopular opinion.
No, it's not.
Okay.
I think Houston's going to put whoever they play, Houston's going to put them out.
I agree. I'm with you. Like, Houston just, like, they play hard every single night. They have a deep team. Steven Adams has like shown some life. They just really, really play hard. They have guys that can switch on defense. Like, they got it. I worry about them like last seconds of games, like who's going to shoot and who you're going to run offense through.
Right.
But I think that they can lock some teams up. And so to your point, like, I don't know if the Lakers win two series healthy regardless, but I like their chances better than Denver if LeBron is 75% and Jokic is 75%.
Here's the crazy thing about that, because I tend to agree with you. I don't have the strongest feeling about the Lakers going to the conference finals. And just in large part, guys, not because I don't think the Lakers are capable on a night-to-night basis, on a night basis, of playing up to whatever level of competition that's in front of them. But the playoffs are every other night. And consistency, fatigue, all of those things to me is like a talent. And it's not an endless reservoir of energy that you have night after night. And the Lakers have been really, really good. They've been far better than I've expected them to be post-trade, especially when you didn't go out and get a rim protector and you've just been using Jackson Hayes and you've just been playing really, really hard. You've been playing harder than everybody else. The problem is everybody plays hard in the playoffs.
Right.
Now, to Denver, this is the thing that would scare me. It's two things that scares me, James.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that I just looked at Jamal Murray's numbers, and I know he's been playing really well in last night's game where he put out Houston in their 9-game winning streak or 10-game winning streak single-handedly. Take that notwithstanding, the 15 games since the All-Star break, here are his splits. You ready for this?
Let's do it.
49, 47, 93. 49 from the field, 47 from three, 93% at the line, and he's averaging 23.5 a game and 6 assists. That's one of the best stretches of his career, and yet and still, the Denver Nuggets are basically a 500 basketball team over the last 10, 15 games. Like, that would scare me if I'm them, because I think you have to put together a consistent stretch where you have health and you have roster continuity, where guys get used to playing with each other again and getting used to, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that,
for sure.
That scares me a little bit, even though they're champions and we've seen them win a championship. We don't look at the Milwaukee Bucks that way. We look at the Milwaukee Bucks as food in the first round. What's to stop the Denver Nuggets from being food in the first round, even with the best player on earth?
I think that's a great comparison, because I just view those teams so much the same. Like, there's nothing other than that they both, one has maybe the most skilled player in basketball and the other has the most dominant player in basketball, right? And those two things alone give you a chance. But their team building, like, I just do not like the rosters of either teams. You factor in, like, Murray obviously, like, has had injury stuff over the last few years. But, like, Denver is a lot different than the team that we saw win the championship. Like, KCP was a huge piece. Bruce Brown was on that team, right?
Yeah.
Bruce Brown, huge piece. Like, their cast of characters around their pillars is just not the same. And I know a lot of people like Christian Braun and things of that nature, but, like, are these guys that are going to go to another level when it's nut crunching time? Like, I don't know. And the same thing with the Bucks. Like, I think adding Kuzma obviously was a good addition. Like, Middleton he's not anywhere near what he used to be. And then I know Gary Trent has dealt with some injury stuff. So they have like four guys that you like, but then Brook Lopez, I don't want to disrespect Brook Lopez, but even then he's like lost a little bit of a step. But like after that, like you're talking about five guys, three of which are older, have played a lot of basketball. And then the bench just is not, in my opinion, like very good. Like, I just don't love the rosters of those teams. And I just think there's a lot of deep teams in the NBA when you get to look at some of the top dogs in each conference. And I think the way I view Milwaukee is kind of the same way I view Denver. And again, my view of Denver is a bit skewed. The Knicks, who have not really beat a ton of really good teams this year, have smoked Denver twice.
Mm-hmm.
And when I turn Denver on TV, like, yeah, I've seen them win some games, but there's just nights where they just don't bring it consistently. I think at a point, Jokic said the other day, at a point, it's like, that's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's enough sample size there to answer some questions.
I think it's critically important that teams have at least one 20-game stretch of pristine basketball where no one can touch you, you're healthy, you're consistent, And then in a 20 game stretch, I mean, you're going 16-4 or right. at worst 15-5. Like, yeah. because the playoffs is that type of stretch. It's 25 games of that. And you're thinking, oh, it's just a regular season. No. You have to show me on a consistent night-to-night basis, home or road, whatever it is, 3-4, 4-5, that you can rev it up every night. Even if you could just rest on it later and say, hey, guys, remember we went 18-2. Okay, cool. That's fine.
Yep.
The Nuggets are 22nd in defense.
Yeah.
Like, champions, and this is an increasingly offensive league, champions, you have to be at least a top 10 defense. I don't even think yeah. that's asking a lot no. in today's game to be a top 10 defense. I feel like the only non-top 10 defense in the last 25 years was the 2001 Los Angeles Lakers when they had, hello, Shaquille O'Neal right. at the absolute peak of his powers and a 23-year-old Kobe Bryant. That ain't happening here.
And even with that, I don't even know if like the two teams in the final, if we went back and looked at the two teams in the finals the last 10 years, I would imagine, I feel like I did this recently, and the only team not in the top 10 in defense was last year's Mavericks team. I think they were like 18th during the regular season or 16th like that. But
no, the Nuggets that won were 15th. The Nuggets won.
Okay. Okay.
But that's 15th.
Right, right.
That's still, right in the middle.
Right.
And they had a lot of breaks go well for them in their playoff road. They were really dominant. They beat everybody in front of them, but they didn't have the toughest road. You wound up playing an eighth seed in the NBA Finals. You wound up playing a play-in team in the conference finals. No shade, but that's just what it was.
No, yeah.
You said the Houston Rockets, though.
Yes.
Because, baby, I saw a man Thompson put Tyler Hero on punishment. Now,
that's my favorite, like, low-key little, like, riff in the NBA.
Put that man, like I want Dakota to pull up. You can't pull up the video, but we can pull up like the screenshot of Amen Thompson throwing Tyler Hero to the floor in their earlier meeting. I feel like it was in November, like when we had like a brouhaha.
Yeah, right? Super early.
And when I saw Amen Thompson say, you know what, you're not scoring today, you're not doing anything today, I think one-on-one defense in the playoffs translates. Because they 100%. Allow you to be a lot more physical. They allow you to be a lot more handsy. And like you said, Steven Adams, really, really quiet injury recovery acquisition. Almost a trade deadline acquisition for the Rockets. And we look at the Rockets the same way we looked at Minnesota last year. Oh, they've never done it. We don't trust you. We don't believe in you. The same thing we thought about Dallas 3 or 4 years ago when Luka wound up putting out the Phoenix Suns in the second round and went to the conference finals. Every year there's going to be somebody that comes out of nowhere, be like, man, we didn't see that coming. It might be the Houston Rockets this year.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, defense travels. Like, mm-hmm. And that's why you always hear coaches, like, as annoyed as people may get, like to me, you can't have an offensive identity. Like, those teams don't do what they're supposed to do. There might be a team like Boston that's a top five offense and a top five defense, but they're doing what they're supposed to do because they can score on you whenever and lock you down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't, like, to me, like, when we think of offensive identities, we think of the 7 seconds or less, like Suns.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that get them? Right? They didn't defend anybody. It was fun for the regular season. They win a series or two and then they lose. Like, you have to be able to defend, and defense travels. And that Houston team, Amen Thompson, one of the best defenders in basketball. And I want to say this too, because I feel like it doesn't. Asar is as good of a defender too. He's just he's obviously had a different process this year and in his career, just given the health stuff. Dylan Brooks, like, Houston was one of the early teams that kind of put out the book on guarding the Knicks and putting a strong wing on Karl Anthony Towns and then guarding Hart or Ananobi with a center. Like, you can mix and match stuff with that team. Like, Brooks can guard a big because he's strong. Like, we make fun of Dylan Brooks, but like, bro is pivotal to winning basketball. He plays hard.
If he
brings
doesn't
emotion.
Sabotage himself.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't. Like, it's not like, can he chuck at times? Sure. But like, he's going to get it back for you by stopping a guy three possessions in a row. Like, and he's not like overly chuckish. Like, it's, he plays with it. He doesn't sabotage himself. That's a great way to say it. But like, man, that team is deep. They play hard. They're scrappy. The identity of their coach. Like, I'm with you. I think Houston, I know people got to see things before they believe things, but I like to, right or wrong, I like to call my shot early. And I think Houston is the team to watch out for in the West. Like, I think Oklahoma City wins the West. I want to make that clear.
Yeah.
But I think Houston is like the team that everybody walks away from the postseason like, okay, that team, like, they got something going.
They're third in defense this year.
Like, insane.
Yeah, we know that they're going to need try to figure out, and it's probably Amen Thompson that's going to be the guy as he develops into the guy that creates all the shots. And when we turn this thing over to him, he's going to be like the guy, even above Alperen Şengün, even above a Jalen Green. I think he's the guy. Same thing with, to some degree, Ausar Thompson. If there's anybody on that Pistons team that I'm not trading other than Cade Cunningham, and I've verified this with a lot of executives around the league, and they looked at the roster, they're like, no, that's the second guy I'm not trading. It's Ausar.
Yep.
That's a discussion for another day. We will talk about that later. But
okay.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the New York Knicks. Welcome back to The Good Word, here with James Edwards. James, of course, covers the New York Knicks. James, the Knicks are like this great detective movie. Like, remember, like, the great detective movies like Seven or Fallen or whatever?
Yeah.
And there's always, like, the plot twist at the end, or the usual suspects, mm-hmm. when Kevin Spacey's leg straightens out. And it's like, wait a minute, how are you completely aware of all of these dead bodies, but you just have, like, it had nothing to do with you, but I can tell you where all the bodies are buried. That feels like Tibbs, right? Because I look at the list of minutes per game, right? Number one, Josh Hart. Right behind him, a tick. Number three, Mikal Bridges. Number six, OG Anunoby. Number 16, who's on vacation right now, according to Tibbs? Jalen Brunson. This is a vacation. That ain't no injury. This is a vacation for Jalen Brunson from Tibbs, because that's the way Tibbs is seeing. If I can't play you 40 minutes tonight, you are on vacation. Now, we all saw him get hurt in LA. That ankle went the other way. Wasn't pretty. Clearly joking.
Right.
James, is this a situation where the construction of the Knicks is either A, so dependent on Jalen Brunson to be the all-everything guy? You wrote a great piece at the start of the season detailing how they've built everything around him, getting the best stretch big, the best wing on the market, the best two-way wing on the market in Brunson, Karl Anthony Towns. They've done everything to build around him. Is this only a car that Jalen Brunson can drive? Or is this car on the verge of breaking down no matter who's driving it?
Loaded question. This is my thing with the Knicks, and I don't even know if this is what you're asking, but I think a lot of conversations start here. I wrote this when they made the trade for Towns. I wasn't covering the team yet. I was still in Detroit when they made the move for Bridges. A few weeks earlier had just started when they made the move for Towns. And this isn't an indictment of Towns. This roster, to me, and I know people talk about the Tibbs minutes thing. If you're Tom Thibodeau and you work for an owner who can be sporadic in terms of expectations, clearly they decided, the front office and the ownership, to go all in this year. Mm-hmm. So I imagine there's expectations that come with that. We wouldn't know. We don't talk to anybody. You're Tom Thibodeau and you maybe feel like, I have to succeed with this. You look down at the end of the bench, who are you putting in? And he made a point the other day, like, wings play more. The best players in basketball are wings. There's Jason Tatum, there's Jaylen Brown. Those guys play a lot of minutes too. You're not going to put Landry Shamet on Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum for 25 minutes a game. Your wings play more. That's the way it operates. Mikal Bridges has led the league in minutes before. Twice, actually, I believe. This is nothing new to him. OG, if you look at total minutes, those guys are at the top. But if you look at minutes played, like, Brunson and Cat are in the 20s, late 20s, early 30s. It's the wings that are toward the top. So I understand where he's coming from with that. I think for me, the biggest fundamental issue with this Knicks team is the roster. It's not just dependent on Brunson. This starting five has to play had to play phenomenally and has to play phenomenally for them to be a championship team. And they just haven't done that enough consistently. They obviously have a bench that has a second round pick on there and Tyler Kolek, who was good the other day. Campaign, a guy who's bounced around the league and has had a pretty good season, right? But bounced around the league. Landry Shamet, another guy that's bounced around the league. Precious Achiuwa, a guy that's bounced around the league. And is he a four? Is he a five, right? Mitchell Robinson just comes back. It is not the greatest depth team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm all for like going all in. But I thought they had something good going last year. The city was behind that team. It was a gritty team. They found ways to win.
You think they got too much too soon?
I think, yeah, it felt like they had done a good job of being patient, and then they just decided we got to go for it. And I didn't think so. I think they could have, and I think losing Isaiah Hartenstein was a big reason of that, right? Like Oklahoma City could offer the most money. And I think that really put things in a different light for them.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, like, I don't think fans would have been upset if they slow played it another year. And if this team, like, I'm not sure if you make the Cat trade or if you don't make the McHale trade and you find a way to replace Hartenstein some other way, like whether maybe only trading one pick or two picks to get somebody. I'm not sure that whatever that team looks like isn't as good as this team. Like, there's depth. They lost a little bit of grit, right? Like, you could say what you want mm-hmm. about Julius Randle. That's a tough mofo. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dante DiVincenzo, that's a tough dude. Like, they've lost a little bit of that. And they went all in this year. And I just think it's a team that has, that is a, let me make this clear. The Knicks are a good basketball team. Mm-hmm. They are just a good basketball team that has obvious flaws. They haven't shot the ball as well. They don't get up a lot of threes. They haven't been shooting the ball well in general the second half of the season. They play at a slower pace when Jalen is out there. And that's not a knock on Jalen. Like, I would, whatever pace Jalen wants to play at, that's the pace I'm playing at. He's that good. They can't defend. They really struggle to defend. They have some highs, they have lows. But like, when you have Jalen Brunson tries defensively, he has physical limitations, right? Karl Anthony Towns, I don't blame Towns for not being a good defender. He is what he is.
Carl is Carl.
And they traded for him knowing he is what he is. Mm-hmm. So now you have two guys who struggle defensively, just off physical limit. Like, Carl's, he's had knee injuries. He's blah, blah, this and that. Like, he's older. Like, this team just to me wasn't, it didn't need to be built like this quick. And I think that's where the Knicks' biggest issue is right now.
I'm 100% with you, James. For one, you brought up Brunson and Towns. That's at the point of attack, and that's at the rim.
Yeah.
And no matter what type of wings you have, you can't hide Jalen Brunson so much because they're going to hunt him down anyway. They're mm-hmm. going to wind up forcing those switches and getting Bridges off of him and getting OG off of him and putting Jalen Brunson on the island or running Bridges and Towns in a 1-4, 1-5 pick and roll and saying, pick your poison.
Yeah. You can't, and Bridges has been a good defender. He hasn't been what they need him to be to make up for the deficiencies of the other two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're asking, once again, and it's not just the minutes played that gets me. It's the type of minutes that's being played. It's the amount of torque on the body. It's the amount of responsibility. It's not like you're playing 37 minutes and you're standing around waiting on the action. You're consistently being involved in the action, be it with the switches or be it with on the ball. Right. That's a tough thing to try to keep up with the body, the mind, and to stay reasonably effective. Now, the bigger point about going all in, James,
mm-hmm.
Phoenix went all in. KD, Booker, Beal. The function of this collective bargaining agreement that I don't think everybody really, really understands is if you're going all in, In the words of Jalen Rose, when the Fab Five rolled out their starting lineup against Notre Dame, I believe, as freshmen.
Oh, God.
He looked around and said, this shit better work. Like, if you go all in, yep. It had better work. And you can't have two super max-ish guys or max super max types with big holes and deficiencies in their game because you don't have the mechanisms to go get a vet minimum guy, to go get someone out of the buyout market, to go get a lower priced role player who can play above his head. You almost have to have pristine team building anyway to yes. get to where you want to get to. Not when you're, you know, like Carl Towns has had knee issues throughout his career. Like Jalen mm-hmm. Brunson, he got hurt in game 7 last year against the Pacers. OG Anunoby had a hamstring last yeah. year. Like this team, and this, whether it's the coach or not the coach, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is this is the roster that you have. And if you don't have, like you said, depth behind it, man, you're putting so much stress on every single player in front of them that I don't think they're built. Like, I don't think they're built this year. I don't know what type of change you can make this summer that can elevate them to the Boston, to the Cleveland, assuming that they're there, sort of category in the Eastern Conference. I feel like their ceiling is a second round team, and it's going to be that.
I think that their hope is that something happens in Boston where they have to blow it up. Mm. I think they are waiting out Boston. Now, with that said, if you spend $6.1 billion on a team, you can spend whatever it takes to keep that team together, right? Mm-hmm. Or the way that they've developed guys. So now you're the Knicks, right? Like, is it important for guys like Tyler Kolek to play? And he's been playing with he played the other night with Brunson out and Deuce McBride sitting, and it sounds like Deuce will miss a few more games, right? Like, that's going to be beneficial to team building. You need to, the few picks that you have left, you need to help, you hope that you hit on those picks, mm-hmm. right? Now, with that said, when you trade 5 picks for a guy that's never made an all-star, that's why OKC's up here. They develop, they make the trade, get Shea. We have our guy. We pick. And eventually they're going to have to make decisions, right?
Right.
But they have a bunch of really good players on young deals. And then they add like middle tier guys like Alex Caruso, right? Isaiah Hartenstein. Now, if you're the Knicks, Towns just started his massive deal. Mm-hmm. Say it doesn't work, right? He's not getting younger. He's obviously had knee issues. You're not going to, and to their credit, they didn't give up a ton for him. I don't really mind the cat trade, right?
Right.
Like, I mind it in the sense that you lost a very big bench piece in Dante. You had to give up a first. Like, it is like what it is. I'm of the belief, like, if you didn't think you wanted to bring Randall back, whatever. But, like, I don't think you needed to go get a guy who has a 5-year deal. And again, this is not a knock on Cat. Like, I like Cat. Like, Cat right. is one of the best offensive bigs we've ever seen. Great person. But we're talking about from like a team building standpoint. Like, so now you latch yourself in to a guy who's on a 5-year deal. Like, where I think that if there's a world where we kind of, I think I wouldn't be surprised if there's a world where we view the Cat deal like Levine, like how Levine was being treated sooner rather than later, right? Because teams know he has a deficiency on the defense. Again, he's had knee issues. And, like that stuff matters. And then you trade for Mikal, and I don't mind trading 5 first for a player if he's the missing piece and you have all this other stuff. And again, Mikal didn't ask to be traded for 5 first. This isn't a knock on. It's like the Luke Kennard thing when we were both in Detroit.
He is who he is.
Like, yeah, people took it out on Luke Kennard because the Pistons didn't draft Donovan Mitchell. Luke Kennard's a good basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
Mikal Bridges is a good basketball player. He hasn't. He's always going to be compared to the 5 first-round picks, but he hasn't been as good defensively as they needed him to. And he's a mid-range shooter, mid-range scorer, and that's kind of that's not necessarily conducive to helping a team and those around you get better. I think that the Knicks. Okay, so even say this doesn't go well this year, and then they're like, okay, let's go get Kevin Durant. What is that going to fix? What is that going to fix? They're going to have to trade 2 of those guys to go get Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. They don't have any picks. You could trade your 2031 pick swap if you want, whatever. That's all they really have left. And, okay, so you get Kevin Durant. So you still have no bench. And the defense hasn't changed. So I just don't – it has to work. I wonder if maybe they bite the bullet and say, like – say it again, saying it doesn't work out. Like, do you – egg on the face. All right, let's see if we can trade Mikhail for two picks and two rotation players. Help balance out the roster, help get, like, right? Like, that's, when you say, like, I don't know what you can do, to me, that's the only thing that kind of, like, comes to mind to make sense if you're looking at, like, proper team. But now, there's a world where they just want to star hunt. And I would say that what we've seen so far suggests that that might be the case. New York City, mm-hmm. bright lights, like,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't, if you're willing to deplete your bench that much, like, to get Towns, and, like, are you, maybe there's a world where the owner is like, let's get the biggest star we can get. Maybe they luck out and they can get Giannis. But if I'm Milwaukee and I'm trading Giannis, I'm rebuilding. And the Knicks right. don't have stuff to give for rebuilding. So I don't know. We'll see. I just think the roster, I thought Leon and those guys had done such a great job up to this point. And I understand their logic, but I think they missed just like, and again, we don't know if the process, like, to me, when you make those trades, you're ready to compete now. So, like, we don't, they don't speak to the media, so we don't know necessarily what their plan is. I can just go off the actions. Like, I thought they had done a tremendous job of being patient, building and building and building a team that, similar to, like, Detroit fans, New York fans love those gritty teams. And that team last year was as gritty as they come. And then they kind of just were like, all right, overnight, like, they lost their patience, a lot of picks from Mikal Bridges, which that, to me, signals that they thought they were close, ready. If they were willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get the bigger name in Cat. So these next few years could be interesting.
No.
As soon as this summer, I guess.
It's gonna be interesting by May 15th, tell you that much. Now, yeah. We're gonna do a blind reveal. All right. And I'm gonna have Dakota put this up on the screen. I'm not gonna tell you the player.
Ooh.
I'm gonna give you these numbers, and I want you to tell me who you think this player is, or what okay. you think this player is. Are you ready?
Yeah.
27.1 points, 6.8 rebounds, 5.3 assists, 1.9 steals on 48, 35, 82 splits. You can either guess the player or you can tell me what you think he is.
That's all NBA Blake Griffin.
That is not Blake Griffin. Good oh. grief.
Hold on. Blake was balling that.
Yeah, yeah. But why would I be bringing up Blake Griffin right now?
I thought we were transitioning to Cade, to be honest.
No,
with you.
No.
That's, give me this. Hold next. On. Give me the stats again.
27, 7, 5, 2 steals on 48, 35, 82.
Knowing you, it's probably Zeke, but Michael no, Jordan. I don't. Michael Jordan. I don't.
You will laugh when I tell you this. Those are the playoff stats of the last 2 years of Jimmy Butler.
Oh. Really?
Those are the playoff stats. The last 2 years Jimmy Butler was in the playoffs. I mean, he didn't play last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was hurt. So the year that he took the Heat to the finals and the year that he was within a whisker of taking the Heat to the finals. I bring up those numbers, A, because I'm going to Miami tomorrow to see the Jimmy Butler versus, you know,
and
going
to
back to Miami.
See right? some other things. I ain't mad
no,
at
no,
you.
No, no, no. No such thing. No such thing. I'm already tanned enough. I'm brown skinned. I'm a crisp.
This Miami. Crisp brown. Tell no. my mommies hello.
Can I say that on here? Yes, you did. You okay. you did say that, and that's
can
fine.
Can I?
Yeah, you can. It's not okay. a problem. Nobody's going to get, you're not going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Maybe with your girlfriend, but you ain't going to get in no trouble here.
Now, she heard it.
Now, can Jimmy Butler, and that's a 40-game sample size, mind you, 39-game sample size over those 2 years,
mm-hmm.
can Jimmy Butler get back to that player with the Golden State Warriors this playoff? Mind you, with Stephen Curry being out right now and the Warriors roster as constructed. Are they constructed for Jimmy Butler to have that type of effect? And if he does, James, where does that put them?
I don't think that they need that from him. And I don't know if he necessarily wants to do that. I think he will. But that you if he's doing that, that means something's not going right with their Steph-centric offense, in my opinion. Jimmy's putting up those numbers. It was on a Miami team that was centered around him and his playmaking and his ability to get to the line. Now, will they need that? Yeah, like I think if you can get Jimmy around 20, 21, 22 points a game and everything else is similar, like that's huge because you have Steph Curry, you have Draymond Green, and you have Kuminga's back, right? Like there's stuff that they pods. Like they have guys that can do a little bit more in comparison to It feels like the last few years. If you're the Warriors, do you want that? Sure, yeah. I think, though, if you have those numbers, that means that maybe, like, something's, like, Steph's not playing, Steph's missing. Like, I feel like it'd be tough for Jimmy to put up 27 a night with Steph playing, but I do think there's a level where Jimmy can get to in the 20s that, like, is the perfect balance of him running the show himself with Steph sitting, or they stagger, obviously the staggers, and him, like, picking his spots in between, kind of Steph running around everywhere and picking roles. Like, I think there's a good balance there, and I think he's going to turn it on to that level when that happens. Like, I think he's been one great professional. Like, I love how, shout out to Raymond Ritter, our guy. Like, you see Jimmy talking after every game in front of his locker. Ain't nothing crazy going on. He's not worried about scoring. He looks to really love his teammates and the situation he's in. And I think because of that, and I think his love and respect for Steph, like, I don't know Jimmy. You know Jimmy way better. And I've never met him. I could see him being like one of those guys that, like, because of his love and respect for Steph and what he does, and even Draymond to it, like, right? That he wants to, like, he wants to win for himself. But, like, I genuinely believe, like, Jimmy's, like, one of those guys, like, I'm not going to be the reason this thing ends.
Like, yeah, I
think that's a real thing with him.
I think the thing that people get about Jimmy, things that people get wrong about Jimmy, they think is Jimmy's about Jimmy. Nah, Jimmy just has his own set of principles.
And he's about his money.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
that doesn't, you could be about your money and not, and that doesn't mean you're about yourself. Right. Those, especially on a basketball court.
Yeah, yeah. And Jimmy has quirks about him and things that clearly we've seen at different stops, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're playing with guys who have accomplished more than you, and I just literally just thought about this. He's never, save for the time that he was around Dwayne Wade. And, okay, you could say Derrick Rose, because Derrick Rose won an MVP.
Right.
But the way, and I covered that Bulls team, mm-hmm. the three alphas year, and it was crazy, but crazy in, like, a real fun, competitive, like, every day was like, man, who's going to do something crazy now? Like, it was fun from a journalistic standpoint.
Yeah.
But watching Jimmy seed to leadership of Dwayne Wade, right, and sort of giving him the complete respect as the vet, as the OG. Mm-hmm. He hadn't played with anything like that since. Like, oh, this guy's accomplished. He was really close to Pau Gasol. And when Pau was there, when I first got to Chicago, like, I could see the synergy that those two had. Jimmy didn't have that in Philadelphia. There was nobody for him on the floor that said, you've accomplished more than me. Same thing with Minnesota, with Wiggins and Towns, a younger version of themselves. And then in Miami, you know, there's just Bam, pretty much. And then Tyler Hero at different levels. Now he's at a spot where these guys are decorated. They're champions. They're Olympians. They've gotten to places that he wants to get to, still desperately wants to get to. And I think you want to make sure that you're, like you said, not only are you not the reason that this thing goes sideways, but you're not going to rock the boat in such a negative way that people can point you out.
Right.
And say, there's Jimmy doing what Jimmy does. No, he's by and large, he's going to be himself. Like, he doesn't.
It feels like he's gotten in line for the first time, maybe since, when I mean, like, get in line is, like, we always talk about, like, the best teams understand the pecking order.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy feels like, just from observing and reading and watching his interviews and how he's even played, like, he's third in line. And he's okay with that. Like, and I don't mean third in line, like, scoring. Like, obviously, they need him more score. But in terms of, like, being able to walk in with the Vince McMahon walk, right? Like, there's two dogs on that team who have accomplished things that he will never be able to accomplish. And they are still very much in the process of trying to add to that. And he realizes that. And I think he's conducted himself. And again, his antics or whatever, like, it's funny, like, as somebody who doesn't have to cover it, like, an observer, it's funny. But, like, Jimmy never, like, struck me as, like, a teammate. I don't know. You might say
No. It's far more layered and nuanced and complicated than just saying, oh, he's an or oh, he's a saint. But I do think that there is a general respect that you have for guys who have not only done it, but they put the work in. Jimmy respects work, and he knows that Draymond's a worker. He knows that Steph's a worker. He doesn't have to have any level of conversation with them about, hey, you're not bringing it as hard as I am bringing it. Like, that's the thing that annoys Jimmy. If you're not bringing it as hard as me, and I'm the max salary guy, I'm, you know, you should be trying to get like me because you don't have what I have. And I'm out here fighting like I don't have what I have. So why aren't you trying to get like me? Like, that's the level. Now, I'll tell you this, and this is hot take alert. So put open the sirens, right? As of this moment, and granted, it is, what is this, March 24th. So we are likely to have so many more twists and turns. Like, the Warriors are in the sixth spot, and they're two full games behind Memphis, who's on the three-game losing streak. Anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if Denver and Golden State are in a 3-6 Mafia series, oh, Denver's going home. And I think Denver's a better team. And I think Denver handled Golden State the last time they played them without Jokic on the floor, because that was Aaron Gordon hitting a whole bunch of threes. Jamal Murray didn't play.
That's right.
Playoff series, playing every other day, the attention to detail and everything else, I think it'd be different. And I could be wrong, but I feel like with the way that Denver has been playing, you know, as a whole, barely a 500 team, Golden State has been surging since getting Jimmy Butler, 17-4, 17-5, whatever it is. Assuming that Steph is healthy, we got to assume that Steph is healthy. He's going to be on the first leg of that road trip where they're going to spend a lot of time in Miami because they have days off in between the game in Miami on Tuesday, and I think they play Friday in New Orleans, and I think it's like a 5-game road trip, whatever it is. Yeah. I'm sure he'll play at some point. But as long as Steph is reasonably healthy from that tailbone injury and fresh enough, they're going home. Nah.
Yeah.
Denver's going home.
Denver's going home
that series. Like, I don't want the Golden State Lakers series in round one. I don't need that in my life. No, I don't need the toxicity.
No, I want Warriors Nuggets. I want to watch Steph versus Jokic. I want to see, like,
that would do numbers.
And to me, those are like the two, like, in the West specifically, like, those are the two kind of, like, obviously the Warriors have been the poster boy for almost a decade now, and to me, Denver has been like the everything that's right about basketball, right? Like, team continuity, your coach and your star players being together for 8 years and then finally breaking through. You know what you're going to, you know, the style in which they play, right? Like, they're one of those unique teams that has like their own style because of Jokic. And like, I would love that, and kind of just to see which team is still has a little bit left and which team, like, does that force the Nuggets to do kind of like a Warriors situation where it's like, okay, we need to like get some help around here.
You got
to
go all
in. They do. And I want the Nuggets to lose for a wake up call that I don't really necessarily love how they built a team.
You're building with financial constraints. I'm very fascinated at the very future of the Denver Nuggets. When we come back, we're going to talk about someone whose present and future I'm fascinated by, and that's Detroit's Cade Cunningham. Welcome back to The Good Word. It's time for the last word here with James Edwards of The Athletic. James covered the Detroit Pistons during the dark ages, right? Like, the second he left, the team got better. They got their 40th win on Sunday afternoon against the New Orleans Pelicans. Ron Holland had 26-5-5. Like, that, you know, utterly amazing. Cade Cunningham was out. I think it was more or less a precautionary thing for him. But have you noticed that the NBA has noticed that Cunningham is actually really good?
We were only saying it when they were winning a game a month last season, but for some reason, nobody wanted to listen. Cade has been phenomenal, man. I'm first and foremost, as somebody who knows him very well, like, just super happy for him because of the type of dude he is. Like, you know, you've been around him, Vinny, like raised well, great family. Has like a confidence about him, but it's like, it's arrogant, but it's not arrogant at the same time.
It's not
like
outward.
It's not outward.
It's self-assured.
It's like, yeah, it's just like, you think like he sees the lists and all that stuff. Like, really? Like, Cade is
92, whatever it was.
Didn't say, yeah, someone, 67 or whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
Cade is just like a very good dude. And you look and just how his career started, right? Like, comes out, misses the first 23s of his career. Comes the next year, injuries, 14-win season. And all this time, like, we're like, no, this dude is nice. Like, I always kind of likened it to how people talked about Devin Booker early on. Like, oh, this dude's just good stats, bad team guy. I'm like, no, both those guys are nice. Like, they are both very nice.
I think Cade's ceiling is a lot higher.
Oh, no, for sure. For sure. And they might be teammates soon.
I see. I knew you were going to go there. I don't think they should do that. Hey, we just talked about teams doing making like all-in moves when they're not ready. And I love Devin Booker. But I think it's too much profile duplication if it's Cade and Devin Booker, two guys who operate from the same spots on the floor. Neither one of them are supreme athletes, and they're both ball dominant. And you're being a super athlete means I'm making defenses so uncomfortable that I'm creating shots for everybody else. They can both operate, but I don't think they necessarily operate well together. I think Cade's next guy, and I'm not saying you build a team solely with Cade in mind, but that's why I think Asar Thompson, if he develops into being the guy, because he is so athletically gifted, he shifts defenses, he shifts offenses in a way that Cade can just be the smooth player that he is now.
Which was part of the logic with pairing him with Ivy in terms of the athleticism, like thunder and lightning type situation.
Mm-hmm. So my thing to you, Jane, my question to you is, we've been talking about the LeBron, Steph, KD triumvirate. When these guys get old, who's going to take the mantle? Will guys be able to? Anthony Edwards has told you, I don't want the responsibility that comes with it for obvious reasons, y'all. Victor Wembanyama probably wants it, right?
Yeah, and I think for sure.
And he's great enough for it. Maybe he's Cooper Flagg when he comes to the NBA because, let's be honest, y'all, he's white. American-born whites. We have not had an American-born white. An American-born white great player since Larry Joe Bird.
Yep.
I BS you not.
No, you're right. Me and you used to talk about this all the time. Like, who is the best American-born white player? Like, we're talking, like, we're making a list. It's what? Gordon Hayward. David Lee.
Yeah, and hey, the pickings get slim. Yeah. Like, it ain't that long before you get to Christian Laettner.
Yeah, right. Tyler Hero's been like, Tyler Hero is probably the best in the league right now.
Yeah.
Him and Reeves. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Hero's an all-star. Pick your poison. But yeah. So yes, I agree that Cooper Flagg, that is going to generate a lot of it. Especially, let that boy go to Brooklyn. Gentrified Brooklyn.
No, he's going to Utah. They're going to figure that out.
He's going to Utah.
Now, does the league need to put a lot of energy behind the Cade Cunningham machine? Because I tell you this, it's better for the Pistons long term if they play the New York Knicks in the first round of the playoffs. Whether they win or lose, I think it's completely immaterial. But I think if you play the Pacers or the Bucks in that 4 or 5, you're going to be on NBA TV. If you're playing the New York Knicks, you're playing at Madison Square Garden, you're playing on ABC in primetime, and it lays bare all the things that you think you are as a franchise and as individual players. It is the ultimate mirror. I think that's the most important thing for that franchise is if they stay in that 6 and they play the New York Knicks in the first round and win or lose, I think is the best thing to happen to that organization. And it's the best thing probably for Cade Cunningham because he's under that microscope. He's under that spotlight. And if he plays above where he's been this year, whether they win or lose in that series, the league is going to have to say, hey, man, we need to really start putting some energy behind this dude.
Yeah. I didn't think about that aspect of it, of not notoriety, but the heightened attention that comes with it. As you know, and I've told this to my people off the record, I don't want that series.
Edwards special.
Yeah, I don't necessarily want that series. Yes, it'd be great to go home. Yes, it'd be great to see all my people. But you know, in our business, fans are like, Pistons fans think I work for the Knicks.
Yeah.
Knicks fans think I'm a Pistons fan.
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's just a weird, like, it's just, plus all the extras.
Oh, you mean like the dude who who covered the Pistons and then went to Chicago and was called like a Bad Boys operative. Like yeah. I was traveling through time and it was 1991 and all of a sudden I gave Scottie Pippen a migraine.
Right. Like there's, it's 100%. Like, listen, we like Jimmy Butler. We all have motivations that are beyond where we just because we are from somewhere. I'm from Flint. You're from Detroit. Like, these are jobs at the end of the day, right? So there's like, that's just me being weird about the whole thing. But I agree with you that there is a heightened attention that comes with that. I would love to see Pacers Pistons. I think that because my biggest thing with the league, and I understand like who's the next, we need more like storylines. We need more rivalries again. And is there a more other than what? Pistons Bulls? Knicks Pacers, Pistons Pacers, Lakers Celtics. Like, if we're making a list of the best 10 rivalries in sports, Pistons Pacers is in there for various reasons. And teams,
you mean in the NBA? You said in sports.
In the NBA.
Yeah.
And those two teams already, we've seen some stuff this year. Like,
they don't like each other.
They don't like each other. And I think, if you're Cade and you hear all this, Halliburton's that. Cade's better than Tyrese Halliburton. I don't know how many people. I don't know if that is the majority agreement, but I think he is. And I think
Cade's all NBA second teamer.
I think at the minimum, I'm with you on that.
At the least this year, he's a second teamer,
and he will be better than Tyrese from here on out, barring injury. That's just. He is a better, but Tyrese is a very, this is not a slant to Tyrese Halliburton.
Pacer fans remember you.
I know. I feel like I always accidentally like throw dig. I like Tyrese. Like, I want to make that clear, but Cade is better and is going to be better. He's the number one pick. You ask all of the peers his age, like, who was that guy it was Cade. Like, they talk about him this way. Like, he is this guy.
He was bred to be a superstar. Like,
yes,
there is something, and people might take this the wrong way, because I do like people who get it out the mud. Like, I think we need more get it out the mud stars in the league as opposed to Nepo babies or, he got a familiar last name.
Yeah.
I'd rather have more people who come from nothing because there's a desperation there. But with Cade Cunningham, it feels like he was bred at a very early age how to carry himself like a superstar, like a franchise player, like a professional. Some people view that as a burden. It seems like he doesn't carry that burden, because last year during that terrible losing streak, he dragged his ass down to that interview room every single night
him
to
and
take
Stu.
Responsibility in ways that nobody else in that franchise did. So now that it's coming around on the other side, you're damn right, I'm going to give him all of the praise that he's due and say he's a top 10 player and can get higher, and say that the NBA, who desperately needs players with names they can't pronounce.
That's fair. And
it's just what it is. I'm not making the rules.
No, you're right. You're right. You're right. That's a great point. And I think too, like, the NBA is better when the Pistons are good.
Absolutely.
Like, you can say that these are two Michigan guys on this podcast saying that. Like, again, people that know me, I grew up a Clippers fan. Like, Sean Livingston all day, baby. Like, this is not nothing rooted. The Pistons from 2001 to 2009 sold out every single night. Detroit, contrary to popular belief, you go to a lot of these arenas around the NBA. We call them in Michigan, we call them snowbirds. You go to Orlando, it's a Pistons game. Go to Miami, there's a lot of Pistons fans. You go to LA, there's more Lakers fans, but there's a good amount of Pistons fans in there too.
For sure.
Like, this is a franchise that is one of the rare franchises that they won a title in the 80s. They won a title in the 90s. They won a title in the 2000s. Like, this spans sons. This spans dad and grandpas, right? Like, they've seen success, and now the sons are seeing some success, or the early beginnings of it. So the way that they play, again, similar to Denver, right? Like, style, like, Detroit has a particular like style about them that I think like the NBA needs more of, and they need more villains. They need more storylines. They need more, like, the more Isaiah Stewart's on TV, like, I think the better. Like, the dude is plays his ass off. And then you see these Twitter clips of people like, I never even know Isaiah Stewart played basketball. And they just show him fighting. It's like, no, if somebody would, if they would have got him to 20 minutes a game, we might be talking about Isaiah Stewart on an all-NBA defensive team. Like, he's been that good this year.
Yeah, and that's
like, there's
a
just a lot of like interesting things to watch about that team.
And that's a problem for the NBA is that we have these, some of the rules I like as far as awards. Yeah. That one is not, you want to give them 65 games, yeah, but don't people hold people to having to say they have to play 20 minutes in every game. If you want to have a overall general minutes thing, cool. But that's neither here nor there.
Especially with, just really quick, especially with minutes though, because there's politics that go into minutes.
Or it's just games that you don't play 20 to 25
or
minutes.
Or you blew a team out too, right? Like, right. Or you did, yeah, right. But I also think like, games you can control, like that's well, injuries and stuff, right? But like
coaches decisions and everything that goes into that does not over you should be judged by the median and mean of your performances.
Too many outside factors when if you're like counting minutes. I agree.
Yeah, that's all. But that's my man James Edwards, man. James, really appreciate you for joining us this week. We will be enemies for the rest of the week, considering our don't do that for our various college allegiances and all that other type of stuff. And my family has sent a lot of tuition money to Michigan State, and I said, hell no, I'm not. You will never see me wearing green. I wore a green sweatshirt one time in my life, but it was for a really good cause. Now, thanks to James, I really appreciate you, man. Thanks to producer Dakota and the entire team that worked so hard behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back on Wednesday for another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.